And we managed to get this project done about 2 months faster than we would have if we hadn't got these people involved. And we, me and Ed, who's my business partner, we sort of looked at each other and we were like, this is amazing. If we can mix the two things that we love doing together and change the conversation around sustainability from something that's about the world ending to something that's about being a really fun journey, being really fun to be a part of as a sort of journey, then we can get so much more done so much faster.
We're on a mission. We're going to find and uncover the smartest, most successful entrepreneurs on the planet, explore their highs, their lows, and how they ultimately mastered the game. I'm Martin Cook, and I'm excited to welcome you to the Smarter Destiny podcast. I'm grateful for you and your time. Now let's level up together. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another Smarter Destiny podcast. Well, this time we're joined by my friend Ivo Devereaux. He is the co-founder of Sapling Spirits and head of business development there. Sapling Spirits is an awesome brand that I stumbled across by accident. It's a UK spirits brand founded in October 2018. They're a seven-figure business. And being a little bit of a vodka connoisseur myself, I was like, right, I'm going to have to check these out because traditionally UK vodkas haven't been that great. The bar has not been set that high, in my opinion. And I was pleasantly surprised by this delicious tasting vodka. But more than that, Ivo and his team are who we would call enlightened entrepreneurs, because Sapling Spirits is the first, let me get this right. They are leading the way in sustainability, but they are the first climate positive spirit business. Okay, and what that means is, whereas the usual bottles of spirit produced by their competitors might produce 28 kilograms of carbon, not good, folks, Sapling already takes away 4 kilograms of carbon just in the production, and then they plant a tree on top of that. And so there is a tree planted with every bottle purchased, and right on the cork of the bottle is a code where you can actually trace the tree that has been planted and find out more about it. So there's that full traceability going on. This is how businesses should be, folks. Amazing products creating amazing world positive good. And so I am delighted to welcome Ivo to the stage today and learn more about Sapling Spirits together. Ivo, how's it going?
It's going good, Martin. Thanks so much for that great introduction. Good to be here.
There's so much information that we've got to just get into, not just the introduction, but into this episode, because I genuinely am excited by Sapling. There isn't many brands out there which I feel tick like all the boxes, and Sapling is up there. It's such a good vodka with such a good mission. So before we get into that, Ivo, we want to learn a little bit about you, the entrepreneur. At some point in your past, you went from having a boss to being the boss. Perhaps you learned that actually maybe your place in this world would be better served as the decision maker in a business. You maybe realized there was a different way of doing things. If you have a logical starting point for your story, could you take us back to that point and paint us a word picture?
Sure. So I guess I, from quite a young age, I've always been quite interested in business. From a very young age, I've very much grown up around business people. My mum is an entrepreneur in her own right. She is also an author, but she runs the hotel out in Morocco. And my dad's also been an entrepreneur in his own right, and used to sort of set up members clubs and was a large part of setting up lots of different Virgin businesses. And throughout the sort of rest of my family, some of my cousins have got their own businesses. So it's always been, from a very early age, since sort of as early as I can really remember, from about 12 onwards, I've always wanted to set up businesses. I obviously had no idea in any way whatsoever about how they would be done. And obviously from that age, they were kind of naive business ideas, whether it was coming up with a bottom hood for a jacket to put on down the rainy days so you don't get a wet bum, or starting a, what did I want to do? I wanted to start a crepe machine from a really young age. For some bizarre reason, I thought it would be a really great idea. And anyway, it sort of moved on from there and progressed as I got a bit older to being a slightly more serious ambition. So I thought, I can't just leave school straight away and go and set up my own business, because as I said before, I wouldn't really have any idea on how to do it. So my sort of plan was to go and work for a business for a couple of years, learn how it all works on the inside, and then go and set it up. And my initial idea was to set up a music business. So I went and worked for a company called Blue Raincoat Music on the music publishing side, and learned a lot about how a business can grow very quickly. I mean, they when I first went there, they were a team of about 8 people, and by the time I left, they were a team of about 30. So they were fast growing. But I also learned a lot about how the sort of internal struggles of an up and coming business, and sort of many things in terms of what not to do. So I guess it would have made sense for me to go on and start a music business, but at the time it just felt very much like the world didn't need another music business. There was all this talk about sustainability and global warming and all these other things that were going on, so I wanted to create something that had an impact much more on that side of things than giving the world more music to listen to. So and much like many other entrepreneurs, I also struggle slightly with authority, and I've always wanted to kind of be my own boss as well.
What was your sort of next thing that you started looking at whilst looking through this sustainability lens?
So interestingly enough, the kind of the first thing that we started looking at was originally a wonky fruit smoothie business. So we were, so the kind of food and drink space as a whole was something that we both, me and my business partner at the time, found quite interesting, and the sustainability side of it. And so we were looking at doing a wonky fruit smoothie business. And I was very fortunately quite good friends with one of the founders of Innocent Smoothie, and I was having a chat with him about it, and he said that they had actually looked into doing that at Innocent, which is essentially using, as I'm sure lots of your listeners will know, using wonky fruit and veg that doesn't make it into the supermarkets because it's misshapen and therefore gets thrown away, and turning it into smoothies. And they just said that it didn't actually make financial sense. It wasn't a sort of viable business option for them. So he advised not doing it and going down a different route. And at the time, me and my business partner, who were best friends at school, we didn't really know exactly what we wanted to do, but we knew, as I said before, that it was going to be in the sustainability space, and something we both really enjoyed doing together. And as a way of us kind of connecting outside of our work, was we used to go and join lots of different tree planting projects, whether they were abroad. We used to go to this amazing project in the Atlas Mountains, just in Morocco, with a charity called the High Atlas Foundation. And then so it gave us an opportunity to go and explore the world whilst doing something that was quite purposeful. And we were on this project off the west coast of Scotland. This was kind of during the time we were talking, just after we'd finished talking about setting up this smoothie business. And we were planting 150,000 trees on a tiny little island called Eileen Shona off the west coast of Scotland, because there'd been this big forest fire there the year before. And you wouldn't have thought that there are that many forest fires in Scotland, but weirdly there are actually quite a few. And we were basically given the task of getting more of the locals involved in the project. And I don't know if you know much about the tree planting season, but it essentially runs throughout the winter. And once it's over in sort of March time, post-March, and the ground gets too hard, trees won't take root and they'll die, so you kind of have to get them done within that time frame. And we had all these trees to plant, and we need to get them done before the end of March. So we were coming up with all these different ideas of how can we make this slightly more interesting, rather than just getting people to come and stand in the rain and freeze their asses off basically for a number of weeks. How could we make this seem really fun and interesting? So we ended up coming to the idea of setting up a cocktail bar, renting some speakers, getting some DJs involved, and turning the planting project into a sort of tree planting party. So we'd plant trees in the daytime, and we would sort of get pissed in the evening and party until the early hours of the morning. And we sort of set up all these posters and all the rest of it. And we got about 40 people from just off the island in the mainland, the local village, to come and help us out, based on the fact that they weren't just going to be freezing, they were going to be having an awesome time whilst doing it.
And we managed to get this project done about 2 months faster than we would have if we hadn't got these people involved. And we, me and Ed, who's my business partner, we sort of looked at each other and we were like, this is amazing. If we can mix the two things that we love doing together and change the conversation around sustainability from something that's about the world ending to something that's about being a really fun journey, being really fun to be a part of as a sort of journey, then we can get so much more done so much faster. So how can we kind of bring what we did there to life? So we ended up actually setting up a proper music festival the year after, and based it all around tree planting and sustainability and changing the conversation from something about doom and gloom to something about positivity and being a fun thing to be a part of. And we could find the most amazing local food, and we had everyone turning up on electric coaches, and we had the most incredible sort of recycled loo roll and all this amazing sustainable stuff. But this was about 5 years ago, and at the time there wasn't anything in drinks or spirits specifically that existed for sustainability. It was always something about, I don't know, you know, about where the distillery was, or the way that the still has copper in it and it's sort of amazing for the taste and all the rest of it. And there was always a tiny little section of their website where it said, oh, we really care about sustainability too. And that just wasn't good enough for us. We were like, everyone's eating amazing sustainable food and they're coming here in the best ways and all the rest of it. We can't let our guests drink what your average sort of what you'd be drinking at your local pub. And so we basically set about making it ourselves and bought a little repurposed 50 liter still and started making vodka, basically.
Wow. Oh, that, I mean, that's an incredible story. I love how, like, the sort of the crowdsourcing part of your journey as well. It's like you had that deadline of when you needed to get all these trees planted, and you're trying to entice people over to this island, this cold island that people probably didn't want to do. And so thinking out of the box there and coming up with an alternative route, like making a party out of it and you know, to entice and that working, and then bringing that forward and saying, okay, well, how can we sort of merge the planting of trees with something else that's cool, and seeing this gap in the industry for vodka. And so You said it very quickly. So we built a distillery, or we bought a distillery and started making vodka. I can't imagine it's quite as easy as that. I mean, so what did you know anything about making vodka prior to that? I mean, how is vodka made? Like, and how did you come about this, you know, this distillery ready for you to jump in?
So we knew, in short, we knew absolutely nothing about how to make vodka. We knew that the industry as a whole was sort of had a few secrets about the fact that it is actually quite a polluting industry. And that's part of the reason I think why no one was really talking about it. And there weren't that many brands that were really highlighting sustainability, is because of the fact that it can be quite a polluting thing. And so we didn't buy a whole distillery. We bought a 50 litre repurposed still, which is a tiny piece of equipment. It can produce sort of 100 bottles at a time type thing. Mm-hmm. Really as a way of us learning, you know, honing our craft and learning how to make vodka in the first place. And in short, you can create vodka from anything that creates starch. So you can make vodka from grapes, apples, wheat, rye, potatoes, whatever you want, anything that creates starch. Creates a chemical reaction which then ferments and turns into 98% pure ethanol. And then there's a process after that where you blend it with water and then you redistill it in order to kind of rectify out the impurities. And we started with a potato mash vodka. We literally were sort of Googling how to make vodka, and it essentially was moonshine, the first batch that came out. It was luminous blue. So it definitely wasn't a good tasting vodka at that time. But we spent about a year after that working closely with various different distilleries, learning about the equipment, learning about how different things work. And we quite quickly moved over to using this really great British wheat. And we, as I said, it took us about a year to get it to the place where sapling is now. And as you said in your introduction, it's now pretty incredible vodka. So all spirits basically start with vodka. So we then thought it makes sense for us to go down the gin route as well. We bought out a gin recently, but gin essentially is just vodka with juniper berries and other botanicals added in as well.
Beautiful. And so what about your production facility now? Has that grown, or are you still keeping it true to that initial 50? Did you call it a still? Like, so not distillery. Is that slang? Like, what's the difference between still and a distillery?
So the actual apparatus to make so it's different. So the still is what you add the ethanol into after and blend it. There's what are called fermentation tanks, which creates the initial liquid that you then turn it, then you start distilling. So we don't actually have our own production facility. We kind of, from the beginning, part of our idea, based on the fact that we really wanted to lead the way on sustainability, was rather than having a distillery in wherever it might be, central London, and then shipping glass bottles all over the world, we want to try and keep the story as local as we possibly can, and the production as local as we possibly can. So we found this wheat in the Cotswolds, which is a regenerative organic wheat. And rather than shipping it miles away, we found a distillery as local as we possibly could to the farm to limit the distance traveled. And so we now use a third party distillery in the Cotswolds with our recipe, our process, all the rest of it. They ferment and redistill for us. And that's kind of the idea in the future. What we'd hope to do is, if we launch in the US and we launch into LA, we'll try and find a local distillery in LA and a local wheat farm, make it using the exact same recipe, so it should pretty much taste the same, and then distribute it locally. So we really are trying to make it as sustainable as we possibly can at every step of the way.
So we talked in the introduction about how you're a climate positive spirit business, and before the tree has even been planted, your vodka is removing 4 kilograms of carbon from the atmosphere, as opposed to adding 28 kilograms like what your competitors might do. And that comes, if my understanding is correct, from the regenerative wheat. What is regenerative wheat?
It's a good question. This is quite sort of new to the industry. People sort of know the word organic, and people know about carbon. And I guess regenerative is kind of the next step that we're trying to teach people about, and the world really needs to kind of come to terms with, because it is the future of farming. And essentially, it's quite a broad term for what really means that it lets the land regenerate in itself without completely destroying the land. So the current form of farming is that, you know, people need to get as much yield as they possibly can out of the land in order to feed 8 to 9, what are we at, 9.5 billion people now around the world. So they've worked out all these processes where they spread all with horrible pesticides, and they plant loads and loads and loads of fields, miles and miles and miles, with exactly the same crop. Which means it's much more efficient for them in terms of actually harvesting it. However, what that does is it completely kills all the biodiversity in the area, because nothing, no insects, no birds, all the kind of natural wildlife that would otherwise be there gets completely blown away out of the land, because they can't survive in those areas. And so not only does it do that, they then have to till the land over and over again. So they harvest, they might take a fallow year, and then they keep tilling the land. And each time they till the land, it kills the soil and it releases carbon into the atmosphere. And what this new form of farming is, or actually is a sort of centuries old, 3,000-year-old form of farming that's been brought back, is they plant long grain wheat into the middle of wild grass and wildflower meadows, and they can harvest the wheat over the top of the wild grass and flower meadows without actually tilling the land. And so it's almost as though there's no farming really going on the land. It's they're just harvesting over the top and letting whatever would naturally grow underneath be there. And on top of that, what we plan to do, and what we're looking to do with our partners, our wheat partners who we're working with on this, is we're also looking to plant the trees from the bottles of vodka and gin sold in the middle of those fields as well. And I think sort of stats-wise, if you put one tree into the middle of a wheat field, it can bring back up to 80 different species of bird to that area that wouldn't otherwise be there. So each tree has a pretty gigantic impact. And but as I said, it's all quite complicated, and it's something that it's quite hard for people to kind of come to terms with. So we've got it sort of written on our bottle and the rest of it. And a lot of people do ask, you know, what does regenerative farming actually mean? And hopefully over the next few years, it will become more and more regular and a well-known term used that your sort of everyday public would understand and know.
Amazing. I love that. And so folks, don't just look for organic, look for regenerative now with the things that you're consuming. So that's just one side of it. So we've got the raw materials, and we've got what you're producing. But then what you're producing now is you're producing something which you have to be over 18, and there's regulations around kind of advertising there. You're selling something that's in a heavy bottle. You're selling, there's kind of established prices, expected prices of vodka. There's a bit of a range, but most seems to sit in a kind of range, if you like, unless it's, you know, a Crystal Skull that tastes like crap, but actually it's just in a pretty bottle or whatever. It's a bit more expensive. Sorry, guys. Could you talk to us a little bit about like how you're selling this? Because unfortunately, we are in this noisy space where the best marketing wins, as opposed to necessarily the best product. The best product will win the longer game, but like getting established and getting to the point where people are trying you out. What kind of challenges have you faced, and how did you solve them?
So, I mean, to put it simply, we really started the business primarily selling B2B into the hospitality sector, partly because it's sort of cheaper way for a young business to get their brand out there without spending millions of pounds on marketing budgets. And also largely because of the fact that the hospitality sector as a whole, sort of ahead of your everyday consumers, are thinking about the sustainability behind the food that they're sourcing and the drinks that they're sourcing much more so now than they were sort of 5-6 years ago. And so as a brand and as a company, Sapling Spirits really fits. If they've got a sustainability agenda and they're looking to talk about it, it's such a simple message for them to say, "We'll look at us, we're now stocking Sapling Spirits rather than Smirnoff or Absolut or Grey Goose or Belvedere, whatever it might be." And they can tell our story, and therefore they're going down the route of being more sustainable themselves. And so, you know, and part of the reason why we've built the business in the first place was to help show these guys how they can be more sustainable. So so that's really exciting for us. I guess we're quite a small business. We weren't set up with big Absolut, Grey Goose and Belvedere budgets at the beginning. So it is, as I said before, that the sort of terms like regenerative, we haven't got loads of money to sort of teach people about those terms. So we are slowly, organically building the business through hospitality and a little bit of direct to consumer and retail going forward. But I guess in our favor, we started this nearly, four years ago now, and sort of coming up with the concept about 6 years ago. Right now seems like the conversation around sustainability is really happening. And part of the reason why we started in the first place is because we were really bamboozled that it wasn't a conversation within drinks. It was only a conversation around food, really. And it very much now seems like the future of spirits is going to be sustainability and kind of who can do it best. And because of the fact that we kind of exist for sustainability rather than it being just about the liquid and sustainability as a added value piece, hopefully we'll kind of be at the forefront of people's minds when they're thinking about sustainable spirits.
I think, yeah, and you absolutely should. I mean, how, when you really think about it, how can you sort of, how can your conscience let you relax over a nice vodka, knowing, this transparency comes into the industry, knowing like how much damage that vodka has done, like on its journey to being put in front of you. And then when there's this alternative, great tasting vodka, we're not talking about like a Prius, which is better for the environment, but it's kind of not fun and kind of doesn't look very good and kind of a bit shit. Like Elon came along with a Tesla, right? And you're like, these are both electric cars, but one's actually a really good electric car, and the other one's a Prius, right? So you've come along now with the Tesla of sustainable vodkas, right? Which actually taste great, and as well as being sustainable and actually improving the carbon crisis, if you like, as well as a part of being there, which is huge. I think you've also hit on something there that it would be close to the hearts of many of the listeners who have an e-commerce brand of some description, and they're using performance marketing, so paid ads to sell. And this last year has been a very, very challenging year for anyone in that space due to targeting being taken away, iOS 14 changes and 15 and so on, and rising ad costs. Now, you identified that and you're working B2B. This is the longest answer question ever. You're working B2B and retail. How do you go about that? Like, what advice can you share with the audience for getting into B2B, selling B2B, the approach, what you need to, what your presentation looks like, what your pitch, who are you reaching out to? How is the business being done? Is it face-to-face with an actual meeting? Like, what is the process for selling like that as a new brand?
Sure. So, I mean, as I sort of said from the beginning, didn't really have any idea on how these things work. So we kind of came up with it ourselves and spoke to as many people within the industry as we could about the best way to build a brand from the beginning up. And it's very much is a relationship-based business. The B2B started things in the hospitality side. So it is face-to-face. It is showing your sort of potential customers and your existing customers a good time, whether it's taking them on a tree planting trip that we would go and do, and it's very much experiential in lots of ways. And I guess sort of on the B2B side, we literally started by producing 1,000 bottles and taking it to a number of places that were local to where we were, talking to them about what we were trying to do as a brand, and talking to them about the liquid, giving them a taste, and really getting them involved in the kind of the journey and getting them involved in helping us sort of shape the direction of where the business was going to go going forward. So they sort of feel very much like they're part of Sapling Spirits right from the early stage. And naturally the spirits business is incredibly competitive. You know, we're competing with some of the biggest companies in the world that not only do they own individual brands, but they're working with a portfolio of drinks that covers 2 different tequilas, 4 different vodkas, 3 rums, so on and so forth. And the way that they do it is they highlight the highest footfall, the highest volume places that you can actually make a lot of money out of. And they tie these guys into big, long contracts where they say, work with us because we'll give you £2 off your bottle of Absolut and we'll give you £4 off your bottle of Beefeater. And over the year, you'll save 25 grand, 65 grand, whatever it might be. So it does make it very, very tricky for up-and-coming brands to come in and try and compete against those guys. I guess, luckily for us, we do have a very distinctive USP and something, a real point of difference rather than it just being about a brand. It is something that they can really talk about themselves. Has very much helped us kind of work around those issues. But yeah, I think going B2B was always going to be the way for us, based on the kind of fact that we started the company to lead the way on sustainability and drinks and show hospitality how they can do it differently. But yeah, I mean, it's very different to e-commerce in the sense that it's all face-to-face, relationship-based, and yeah.
And but that being said, I found you on Amazon. So after all of that, for you know, a search of vodka on Amazon and a quick sort of read of your product page and what you're about and a little bit of checking in your website and so on, had me sold that it was worth at least a punt. This might be terrible tasting vodka, and it wasn't. It was pleasantly surprised. So where can people go to find out more about Sapling Spirits?
So, I mean, in terms of buying it, you can buy it through Ocado and Amazon, as you said, and Selfridges and Portland Masons and John Lewis and sort of premium retailers is where we positioned it right at the start because it is a premium brand. It's £30 for the vodka and £35 for the gin, and it is an incredible liquid, as you said. We spent a lot of time developing it into something that's much nicer than lots of our competitors. So that's kind of where you buy it. You can obviously buy it on our website as well, saplingspirits.com. And in terms of sort of finding out more about it, I guess just emailing into us and having any questions that you might have about what we're trying to do in terms of sustainability or what we're doing with product launches or where you can find it in hospitality, then just send us an email in, or we've got a little chat bot on our website that you can send something into as well, and we'll get back to you there.
Fantastic. So saplingspirits.com was that domain, folks, and then there's a whole bunch of offline places that you can buy it as well. Brilliant. All right, so at this point in the show, we mix it up. We go into the rapid fire question round. I ask the questions quickly. You choose the speed in which you want to respond. Are you up for that?
I'm well up for it. Well up for it.
Are you two thumbs up? Up for that?
Yeah, two thumbs up for it.
There they are. All right. Question number one. If you ever had to start again, how would you make your money?
I would absolutely nothing about them, and it's probably naive to say it's a slightly easier thing to do, but I'd probably trade, buy and sell NFTs. Seems like a good way to make some money quickly.
Certainly at the moment, that is for sure. What's the most common or biggest mistake leaders make?
I'd say starting a business just to make money.
Nice. Who is a great leader, alive or dead, and why?
Someone that I've always found quite inspirational is Richard Branson, who's someone that kind of uses business to create fun in his life.
Absolutely. How do you hire top talent?
Steal from bigger businesses.
How do you do that? How do you entice them away?
I guess sort of give them a better role than what they've currently got. I guess if they've had a number of years and the experience at a bigger business, but they're still not quite at the senior level that they want to be, you could give them a senior role in a smaller business like Sapling Spirits and give them more control and more sort of autonomy over their own destiny in their career. And that's quite exciting to a lot of people.
Nice. How do you evaluate a good business deal?
So generally speaking, I think if it adds value to the brand as a whole, so if it sort of sticks very much in line with our mission from the start, and I guess if we think our current customers or demographic that are already buying Sapling would enjoy the idea of us having gone into business with whatever it might be.
Nice. What's one of your proudest moments?
I think through Sapling, one of the proudest moments was definitely physically planting the first tree that was planted because of the bottles that we had sold. And that was a real sort of moment for us, for sure.
Nice. What's one interesting fact about you that not many people would know?
it's quite a random one. I used to be the national fencing champion of the UK.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Nice. So how many... how many fencers are there in the UK?
I don't know, but I think that there's probably, I've got no idea, I reckon probably about 30,000, 40,000, maybe 30,000 odd.
That's a hell of a feat, that.
Yeah, at one point in my life, when I was about 12 years old, I had to decide whether I wanted to stay in London and basically fence all day every day to try and go to the Olympics or go to a different school outside London and give up. And I just chose to have a normal life.
Have a normal life, albeit planting trees on Scottish islands and so on, inventing new spirits. What daily routines do you have, whether morning or evening, that have helped make you successful?
I wouldn't describe myself as being successful yet. Hopefully one day I'll be very successful. But at the moment, I guess... treating business as a fun venture rather than a money-making venture, which kind of goes back to what I was saying before, and making my bed in the morning.
Nice. What kind of things have you distilled, excuse the pun, in Sapling to make it a bit more fun and a little bit less businessy?
So I guess part of the fun is the fact that a lot of our business revolves around being outside and going tree planting and meeting lots of interesting people from different walks of life. We host a music festival again like the origins of the story of where it starts from. We host a music festival at the end of every year for all of our trade partners to come down, which is a mixture of tree planting, cocktail masterclasses, product sort of launch tastings and panel talks, and then just a real good boogie on into the evening. And that kind of thing is very much instilled into the business. We've got a completely open holiday policy, and as long as you kind of get your work done, we want you to have as much fun as you can alongside.
Beautiful. I love those things. And actually that last one's very Bransonism, isn't it? That's a very I think he did away with holiday and just said you choose how much holiday you want or something, some of the businesses. What book or books changed your mindset or life?
So something I read recently, which I thought was just a great book and really just got me excited about going down the entrepreneurial route, was the Phil Knight's Shoe Dog story of how Nike was started.
Nice. Yeah, that's a fantastic book. We get that recommended quite often, actually, as a fantastic book. We actually log the book answers of all of our guests and try and sort of almost rank them by frequency of recommendation. And that one, I believe, is in the top 10. It's
a nice. Where can I find the list?
I will. It's not something that we've publicly shared, but I'll send you a link after the show. And then at some point we'll get it all nicely and polished and get it out to the audience and listeners, because it is a hell of a list now. What's the most exciting question you spend your time thinking about?
So I guess just constantly asking ourselves why does Sapling Spirits exist? And I guess over time that will evolve. Why it existed right at the start will slightly change over the next 5 years. So why are we here, and what's the point in us being here is a question that I find exciting and gets us up in the morning.
Can you give us a sneak peek into any of the new products that might be coming out in the future?
So the kind of most exciting thing that we brought out is the gin recently. We literally launched it a month ago. So we're not going to launch anything new outside of that for a while. Something we're toying around with is currently, as I said before, the Sapling Spirits very much sits in the kind of premium price point and the way it looks and what the liquid inside it and all the rest of it. We're kind of toying with the idea of doing another gin, another vodka that would be a slightly higher volume skew to go into certain bars and restaurants where it's a bit cheaper. And it's not a dead cert yet for us, but we're going to do some research on it and sort of take a minimal viable product out to trade and get some questions going and see whether people are up for it. And if they are, then we'll give it a go.
Nice. What advice would you give your younger self?
This is a good one. I guess probably don't go into a category that's so competitive. from a business perspective, is a pretty obvious one. But also part of the reason why it's been so fun is because of challenging such big companies. So in a way, that's a double-edged sword. But yeah, I think that's probably one.
Nice. What unusual or underrated food or drink should more people try out?
So I went for dinner the other night in one of our restaurant partners called Native, and their sort of main mission is very similar to us in terms of sustainability. So everything that they source is really great. And they brought out a bone marrow fudge, which was pretty interesting and different and was absolutely incredible.
Nice. And that's by Native.
That is by a restaurant called Native, set up by a guy called Ivan Tisnell Downs.
Nice. And then final question, Ivo. What makes you happiest?
So this is going to be a slightly cringe answer, but I guess it's true. So it's knowing that the people closest to me are happy themselves. And in general, I love being with those people in a sort of relaxed scenario. So whether it's on holiday or whatever it might be. So if I'm with my people that I'm closest to, they're super happy and we're hanging out together in the sunshine somewhere, could have made me happier.
Amazing. I love that. And I love the connection once again with nature. And actually, an old question we used to ask was, like, how do you get flow? How do you get yourself into a state of flow? And nature overwhelmingly was such a frequent response. Nature, trees and water, right? Getting into water, getting near trees were the biggest things. And it's so important. And so ensuring the people around you are happy and then hanging out with them ideally in nature, I think that sounds like a pretty good way to you know, work and downtime. So that's a great answer to top off a great question and answer round. Ivo, this has been, I mean, we've got into the weeds about vodka making and wheat and regenerative, I'll learn that word to say it, I mean, regenerative farming. But it's been tremendously exciting and tremendously interesting to me. And interesting is a word that's like degraded over time, right? People just go, oh, that's interesting. There's a thing to say, but I mean like the original definition. And I encourage people who are listening to check out Sapling Spirits, buy a bottle if you're lucky enough to be in a region where you can, and, you know, just get your hands on it somehow. If you're in the UK in particular, because it's a fantastic tasting vodka, but it's also a vodka with a conscience and doing good things in the world. So Ivo, thank you so much for taking the hard path, the path of the enlightened entrepreneur, to put this out, to make this happen. And I wish you the very best in the future with your brand and everything that it produces.
Thank you so much, Martin. It's been really, really fun speaking with you. So thanks so much for having me on.
Hey there, you incredibly good-looking human. Thanks so much for listening. If you had a good time today and would like more good times in the future, please hit that subscribe button and leave a heartwarming review. I read them all and it will go a long way to help others out there benefit from all the teachings of this show. And if you want to get in touch or otherwise learn more about me, head to martincook.co.uk or smarterdestiny.com. I really appreciate you. You're an incredible human. Until next time, keep crushing.